Covering homegrown talent from the high school gym to the NBA. Toronto basketball fans, this is your home court with Megan McPeak and Dwayne Watson on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto basketball.
Welcome back to Home Court inside the TSN 1050 Sport Check Studios. Megan McPeak, Dwayne Watson, and joining us now in studio is Canadian basketball insider Hassan Alanom. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it, and we appreciate you and all your knowledge when it comes to the Canadian hoops. As it's customary, we like to, you know, give the highlight and spotlight to Canadians, whether here at home playing high school, college, whatever it may be. But Hassan, you are synonymous for your infamous NCAA tracker covering all the Canadians, men and women. What went into your decision to sort of put this tracker together, and what goes into the tracker itself? Obviously, you're giving the updates on stats, but is there like an algorithm you use, or is it just letting people know so they can keep an easy eye on what Canadians are doing in the NCAA?
To be honest, it just started as like a small time like blog post thing, and kind of evolved to like just plain stats because it was much easier to read on a day-to-day basis. So it first evolved into, you know, there wasn't much coverage. Like when you, like, you can't really Google.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I want to look up all the Canadian player stats. And I was like, okay, maybe I can do that. But, you know, when I first started, it wasn't really like a stat, like basketball reference types site. It was just like me just writing stuff out. Then I realized, hey, you know, might as well make it like a basketball reference type thing. It's much easier to follow and much easier to actually use, right? And I think like 2-3 years ago, I was just fooling around with Tableau. It wasn't actually my plan to build something like this.
Right.
It just came up. And I was like, whoa, it works. And, you know, it might be actually useful. So let me just put it out and see what it, you know, how it goes. And people liked it.
Right. It's super easy to use, too. I was playing around with it last night trying to, you know, find out what you have it. You can break it down. You can look at all the players together, or you can break it down by position, height,
class, gender, position.
You can break it down so you can literally just have all the women, all the males, just guards. And it breaks it down for guards, men and women, but then it combines them as well, too.
Yeah.
When you look at that, where can people find? Because I know you're on a few, gets inserted into a few different platforms. But if people just want to go to one area and find out, okay, I want to find out what Dylan Brooks is doing. I want to find out what Kia Nurse is doing, what they're doing. Where can people go to find this tracker to keep updated on the Canadians in the NCAA?
Well, you can right now. It's on two websites: North Pole Hoops and On Point Basketball.
Perfect.
It was on North Pole Hoops last year. This year is the first time it's on Point Basketball. I want to chip with my buddy on, you know, their free agent league. So I figured, hey, it's probably a good spot to put it on there. And to be honest, it's like they love it. And I've gotten like, you know, a lot of responses from it. Right. So that's like the main reason why I keep going. Like, it doesn't actually take a whole lot of work on a day to day basis.
Mm-hmm.
The work happens like when you first set it up.
Right.
Right. And after that, like on a day to day basis, it may take like 5-10 minutes max.
One of the best things about the app is that it allows you to see players that you're not familiar with. I mean, based on if you're pulling like top stats or top performances, there's guys like, oh, I didn't know this person even went to Canisius or some school, or players in smaller schools, or men or women. So having the collection of basically every single Canadian in the NCAA, male or female, we asked this pretty much of everyone, but who do you look at as kind of like the top male player on the NCAA side this year?
This year, going into the season, I would have said Dylan Brooks. Mm-hmm. He started off the season a bit slow, you know, come off his foot surgery. But he's coming on strong.
Right.
Player of the Week honors last week. Had the buzzer beater against UCLA.
Yep.
Followed up with a good game against, I think, 28 points against USC.
Yep.
So he's one to watch. Nas Long, another one.
Iowa State.
He's coming on fire like the last four games. Like I think 23 and a half, something like that. Shooting crazy percentages. Then you got Kobe. This guy, he's not gonna make it to the NCAA March Madness tournament. But Kobe McCowan, insane freshman. Like leads all Canadians in free throw attempts. He can score anyway.
Yeah, he's got a lot of heart. Man. Yeah, that guy plays a lot.
And he's young. I mean, freshman kid doing it. And another guy you should keep an eye out for, Justin Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, six seven, six eight, wiry thin, long arms, 7'3" wingspan, a lot of potential. Like you might see like a huge jump next year.
Right.
This year is kind of still kind of raw. next year, though, you're going to see a big jump.
Cool.
And, yeah.
I know you mentioned Dylan Brooks and what he's done. He's coming back from that injury, and we've talked to a couple people about him at different times. We had someone from the Oregonian on earlier in the show previous. When it comes to Dylan Brooks, how has he been able to respond after injury? Because that's the one thing people, you know, watching them, when it comes to players, is you're unsure how they're going to respond after a serious injury, especially lower leg, when it's the foot or the knee. You never know how a player's going to respond to it. And he's responded. I actually think he's responded and playing better this year than he did last year, even with the injury and missing the first part of the season.
Definitely. And I think you have to credit the coaching staff for bringing him along very slowly as opposed to just rushing him, because he's an important piece, right? He was their main piece last year. This year, they're not really forcing him that much. They're letting him come through and, you know, take his time and get into the groove. And now you're just seeing the results right now. And I think as we get closer to the March Madness tournament, you're going to see a lot of these type of performances. Like, coming down at the end, he's going to hit buzzer beaters, or he's going to come up clutch. He's just that type of player.
Yeah, I was just saying, he is a clutch guy. Yeah. I think it's also the coaching staff's also benefited by the fact they had some other Canadians in the lineup to help
definitely.
Them.
Definitely.
You know, Chris Boucher and obviously Dylan Arp.
Yeah, Chris Boucher, you know, prototypical stretch four in today's days, you know, long, wiry, thin, 6'10 guy, step out, block shots, athletic. Then you got, you know, Dylan Ennis, like experienced guard. He pretty much does everything for a combo guard, right? Yeah.
On the women's side, everybody knows the Kia Nurses of the women's side, but who would you, if you're looking at the women's side, or if someone comes up to you and says, Hassan, I know about Kia Nurse. What other Canadian women do I need to focus on? I know, obviously, there's Potter. She's been really solid over there. Who else? Who would maybe be, like, your sleeper or your silent killer that people might not really know about or be familiar about when it comes to the women's side?
Well, Alex Klein, she plays at Bryant University. She's averaging pretty much the same things as Emily Potter is, right?
Check the app.
Yeah, check the app, man. Check the app. That's all I'm going to say. Then Bridget Carlton, Breanne Cohen, Cheyenne Creighton. All these girls, they can all ball. A lot of people talk about the men's side in terms of, like, the talent coming in. On the women's side, it's a lot greater, and there's a lot more in abundance, right? Like, if you look at if you compare the men's side, right, from the years past, this year is a bit of a drop down, right? Mm-hmm. Last year you had Jamal Murray, right?
Right.
This year there's no one that's, you know,
super
that big,
elite,
and no one's really like the type of superstar type, right? But like, if you look at the women's side, every year there's like, you're looking at least like 5-6 people that can replace, you know, potentially like players on the senior national team down the road. At every position, you're looking at that.
Is that kind of why you give the focus to the women as well, not just the men, to follow for fans, so that people can remember there is a lot of female Canadians in the NCAA that they can keep an eye on?
Definitely, and I think it's important that we give coverage to both sides, right? I know, like, a lot of people just focus on the men's side. A lot of people don't really focus on the women's side. But, like, there are a lot of ballers coming out. And, like, last year, like, you had... Nara Fields getting drafted. Mm-hmm. She's an important cog, right? Yeah. She's probably like one of their main one-on-one scorers, right? As we saw at the 2016 Rio Olympics, you know, she can ball, right? And there's a lot of them coming out like that.
Well, honestly, Hassan, like, your app makes my job easier in terms of figuring out, you know,
it,
like,
makes
who's
both
doing,
of our jobs.
I mean,
so
it's just
much easier
in terms of who's doing what, who should we look out for, who's where excelling. So I mean, like, Canada Basketball thanks you with a question.
Hey, you guys are welcome, man. I mean, it's really there for the community, right? Like, that was the first goal. There was, like, no other goals coming in. And once it blew up, I was like, whoa, I can't believe this.
You can get it on at On Point and as well North Pole Hoops. If people want to check you out on Twitter, where can they find you?
Twitter.com/HassanAlanam. And all my updates are there. And hit me up. I respond. Fast.
You will get a response from Hassan if you hit him up on Twitter. To let you guys know, we've got a huge, huge guest coming up next week. We just want to let you know ahead of time at 3 p.m. next Saturday, Canadian superstar Melvin Edgem, who is in Italy currently playing, will be joining us. Even with the time difference, he's willing to join us right here on Home Court. That will be at 3 p.m. on next week's show. Hassan, thank you so much for joining us. As always, we appreciate what you do, not only for Canadian ballers, but the ones that we may not get to see all the time as they play south sides of the border. Stay tuned. We've got another great guest coming up later up in the show, Chris Dooley. He is the author of Can't Miss, The Kevin Pangos Story. You're listening to Home Court right here on TSN 1050.
It's time for Home Court Highlights on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto basketball.
Welcome back inside the 1050 Sportcheck Studios here in downtown Toronto. Megan McPeak and my partner in crime, Dwayne Watson. And every week, as we do always, because it's a Canadian hoop show, why would we not talk Canadian hoops players and highlight the ones who we thought have been outstanding? No level is off limit. I'm still waiting until we find like that like 6th, 7th, or 8th grader that like just like blows up on like YouTube Twitter.
I kind of feel bad about being part of that whole identifying kids so early and putting that pressure on them. You know what I mean?
But like even just like finding like, you know, that little, not to put pressure on them, but just to like, just to give them the love.
It's a double-edged sword though, I feel sometimes, because it's great for them to, you know, as a kid that young to get that exposure and that recognition. But then it's like, you know, people are like waiting for them to develop and turn into a superstar. I mean, like, we're talking about Kevin Pangos later.
LeBron
I mean,
James
he's kind of
signed.
An example where people were like, yo, he's next Steve Nash.
Right.
Right. So when you're that young, I think there's a little more pressure. But before we get into arts hoops talk, I got to plug
a little hoops talk. I got to expose you because you got something big coming up this week.
Yeah. Next Thursday at the Rivoli, a part of hoops talk, myself and the producer of Home Court, Sean Woodley, and a bunch of other people who are way smarter than me are talking basketball. Sherman Hamilton, Eric Green, Erwin Kayla Gray, among others. You know, so it's gonna be like a lively talk about
it's
basketball.
Fun.
Yeah, it's a really good environment. You've done it before too, right?
I have. The crowd is lively. And yeah. They ask some really serious questions. So Sean, Dwayne, you guys gotta
Sean's got like five of them.
Oh,
so I mean,
well,
this
then
is nothing
don't need to
for
worry
him.
About
I mean,
Sean.
I did the first one, I've been back, but I'm looking forward
but
to
they
doing it again
though. The audience comes with their A game and they will boo you.
Oh,
if,
for sure.
If they don't like you, they'll boo you.
But next Thursday at the Rivoli live in person. Come up, say hi.
Where can people get tickets if they want to check this out?
At Hoops Talk Live on Twitter. Definitely go check it out.
It's awesome. It's fun. But home court highlights, as we do. This week, over the holidays, there was the Holiday Classic. I believe it was in Ottawa and hosted by Central Tech.
It
wasn't
in
Ottawa?
Toronto.
It was in Toronto.
Toronto.
Okay,
Tech,
well, then I just can't read. It happens.
It's okay.
with Central Tech, as of right now, they're part of the NPA league that's going on right now in NPA play. They're 6-1, and they had a really great showing at that tournament over the holidays. And it's always tough when you're in high school to play over the holidays. We see it with the pro players and college players. But when you're, like, 14, 15, 16, 17, and you got to play over the holidays, that's like your break. You don't want to play, but they managed to, you know, not worry about the holidays, and they've been playing really well and had a great showing at that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Central Tech has kind of always been known in the GTA Toronto area as like a football school, and Coach Kevin Jeffries, who came over from Eastern Commerce, has kind of really done a good job with that program, bringing some kids over there and really turning them into a basketball program. Obviously, they're playing in the NPA. They got a little Jordan Brand sponsorship too, so I mean, they're doing their thing, and they hosted in their gym, of course, and a lot of teams came in from the NPA across, I think as far west of Saskatoon, I think. But
crazy.
They did their thing though. I mean, they've got a lot. They got a deep team. There's necessarily like one superstar guy on that team, like John Jonathan, Kevin Osway, Chris Hankins, Steve Rawire got a scholarship offer from Niagara based on his play.
Amazing.
Over the holiday. So
he literally got it just from that weekend.
Well, I mean, he got the offer then, I'm sure. I mean, he did well and did work, and I think that's kind of how it works,
that's
right?
That's wild. That's
so,
amazing.
I mean, I definitely want to recognize a program like Central Tech and what Coach Jeffers is doing and how they're playing this year. And that's only, you know, in the NPA is another alternative. We talk OSBA a lot, but then there's the NPA League that's doing their thing too. So they had a holiday event, which is good because, I mean, I want to see some ball over the holidays. And, I mean, it's usually a dead time for a lot of, like, CIS ball too. So
right. I got to make a note to get Jeffers on a future show.
Yeah, I already admit. I made a mental note too, for sure.
Same wavelength.
He's a Toronto guy for sure. So.
And then, I mean, we just talked to Hassan about him a little bit.
The NCAA Player of the Week.
Dylan Brooks, man. This. Like, I'm always amazed at players, whether it's basketball, baseball, football, hockey, that can have a serious injury and come back strong, the same, stronger and better than what they were before the injury. And like I said with Hassan, like, I think Dylan Brooks, compared to last season at this time, I think he's better right now. And he has had a shorter season.
I
feel like he's more together. He's more composed. He's mentally seeing the game. And we've talked about it just with injuries. You you see the game a different way because you're on the bench just watching as opposed to being in the games. You're seeing things differently. I think he's mentally at a different level than what he was last season.
And the tough thing as a player, and I know it was tough for Dylan, is that he felt that he was ready to play and wanted to be out there and couldn't play. And I think you got to recognize that balance of, like, you know, taking your time and being ready and wanting to get out there and not further injure yourself and jeopardize, because right. he's a key part of that team. I mean, we saw what he did against UCLA. We're seeing what he's doing in the Pac-12 and how he's playing. And he's turning into that player that everyone thought he'd be at the beginning of the season. And now the minute restrictions lifted, he started and he's playing like the best Canadian player in the NCAA.
He's balling out.
Without
hitting
question.
Game winners like it's nothing.
Yeah, so and the season continues to roll on. So only positive things left. They've turned around from how they started the season. Of course, we mentioned playing alongside, you know, Chris Boucher and Dylan Ennis as well. So there's a lot of Canadian love there.
Gotta love Oregon. They love their Canadians.
Hey, the pipeline is strong. I mean, from, you know, DeVoe Joseph went there.
Yep.
Olu Ashalu. Exactly. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys who've been through that the program over there.
Another one in our final highlight. Yeah. We haven't talked about him in a while, actually.
Well, the last time we talked about him, we weren't as complimentary.
That's true. Mr. Andrew Wiggins. Mr. 41. I believe this is what, like the second time this season he's had 40 or more?
You know, he's had it, like, he started the season a little quiet. I think he started a little quieter than we would have liked, and based on obviously the hype for the Timberwolves and the talent that
right.
him, Levine, and Towns have, and obviously the record hasn't reflected it, but we know that this is definitely the big young trio of the mm-hmm. team and what he can do defensively, and, you know, obviously the criticism and the fire that he doesn't bring, but offensively he's been way more aggressive and way more dominant in being efficient at how he's playing ball, and definitely good to see that he's, you know, blossoming into the guy that we
right.
thought. I mean, people are saying, oh, Jabari might have been the number one pick based on he's playing now, but Jabari Parker's a fantastic scorer, but he's not a great defender, and he's an okay rebounder. I think Andrew Wiggins brings that balance, and I think that, you know, they have to figure a way to learn how to win some games, and I know that's what Coach Tibbs is looking for, obviously, and be keeping leads. But I think, you know, for the drop-off you may see in his game where you're saying, like, he needs to make that jump like Jabari made, but he's playing against Zach LaVine, who's averaging 20 points a game.
Right.
So, I mean, he's also got to, like, allow for the guys in his team to grow. And I think that's more of his character than being like, I'm going to score every time.
Exactly.
Think, you know, that's a good thing about Andrew.
And I remember, like, earlier in the season we were talking about it. We were actually having the conversation. We had it with Josh. And the name of the writer escapes me from Minnesota that we had on to talk about Wiggins specifically early on.
I would butcher it because I know it's actually a tricky last name, so I'm not even trying to.
Is this like the season that we kind of see the fall of Andrew Wiggins, because now, like, Cat was, Karl-Anthony Towns was starting to, like, come into his own, was taking over essentially, and people were sort of we were asking the question, like, is this not Andrew Wiggins' team anymore? And now he's sort of solidifying, like, it's not one person's team. It's
yeah.
the three of us.
I think we're
a three-headed monster, and we're going to figure this out.
Well, hopefully, because the other question that comes up sometimes is people are suggesting that, you know, this team has two great talents. Should they trade one of these young talents to get another star to help them get over that hump? And, you know, it's obviously not going to be Karl-Anthony Towns. Everyone agrees on that.
Right.
Would you trade the number one pick, or would you trade Zach LaVine, but everyone looks at the upside? But I think with Andrew, it's, he doesn't care if it's his team, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's the kind of guy he is. But he will definitely make a statement that it's our team, and I think that's positive for him. I think they just got to figure a way to kind of put it together and get some wins.
He's definitely proving that taking the time away this summer from Team Canada has been beneficial
yeah.
to him.
And that was a criticism in Minnesota, of course. I mean, Canada, no one in Canada would criticize him for not working his game enough in the summer, but that was a criticism. He stayed and he worked on it, and you're seeing the fruits of the labor in terms of what he's doing, and obviously hoping that can translate back again for the Canadian national team that he can bring, because everyone knows what he can do on the floor, especially in international competitions. He's by far going to be one of the best players on the floor for Canada if he puts the red and white back on again.
Okay, you touched on it really quickly. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, boy.
If you were GM of the Timberwolves, do you move LaVine or Wiggins to bring in sort of that star player to get them over the hump? Because as of right now, they are 11-25, and winning is something they have to figure out. Or do you sort of see if maybe this season is a season that Thibs, because you bring in Thibodeau, he's so defensive-minded, he's got to get them to buy in there. Do you kind of give them the rest of this season, and then maybe next season as well, too, to figure it out?
You give them some time. This is the first year. We know what he's done as a coach, what his track record is. I don't think, you know, they've tuned him out. I think the talent that he has at his disposal is phenomenal. It's too soon to blow it up, I think. You still got to see where these guys go. They got some other young pieces, too. So you definitely got to give some time. I think everyone thought it was going to happen right away.
Right.
Like, look at these guys. They got a great coach. It's going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's the NBA. They play in the West. But you definitely have to give it some time.
Wild, wild West. Always hard. hard to win in that conference. It's always fun to talk. I love talking about Canadian players. It's always fun to highlight them.
You like the second hour better, don't you? I'm going to tell Josh.
Joining us next in studio, we're going to keep the ball rolling on Canadian hoops. Kevin Pangos. Can't miss the Kevin Pangos story. Chris Dooley is the author and longtime family friend of the Pangos. He will join us here in studio. You're listening to Home Court right here on TSN 1050.
This is Home Court on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto basketball.
Welcome back to TSN 1050's Home Court. Megan McPeak and Dwayne Watson live from the TSN 1050 studios here at Maple Leaf Square. And we are joined now in studio by Chris Dooley, not only a friend of the Pangos family, also a retired teacher and a basketball coach. So it's not, you don't just know the game of basketball because of who you know, but you know the game of basketball because you coached.
I've been around a long time, that's for sure.
So, Chris, we'll jump right into it. Obviously, we know that you've authored this book about Kevin Pangos, and it's titled Can't Miss, the Kevin Pangos Story. You're a longtime friend of the family. You coached with his father. What went into the reasoning behind writing the book rather than just knowing him and wanting to get the story out? But what was your thought process in it?
Well, first of all, I come bearing gifts, and I'd like to get each of you to have a copy of the book.
Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word about Kevin, a great kid, great player, and better person. Sounds cliche. Kevin's dad and I, Bill, coached the provincial team in the 80s together, and we've been best friends ever since, before we had kids. And along came Kevin, and then when Kevin was 16, we were friends at Camp Olympia. We'd get together, and Kevin and my son Daniel and Kayla and my daughter Nicole, best friend, you know, sort of growing up at Olympia. And then Kevin, when he was 16 years old, was the youngest person to make the senior men's team. At the same time, I was reading a book, Outliers, by Malcolm Gladwell. And Malcolm Gladwell talks about what outliers are, people that lie outside the bell curve sort of thing. And I thought Kevin was, and a kid being 16 years old on the national team, it just seemed sort of to make sense. And I felt very, very strongly that this was a story that needed to be told, because I've known the Pangoses forever, and I admired Kevin as a young boy, and for him to get to the national level at 16, it was very impressive. So I just sort of had this idea. And then a little bit of a funny story. I had this idea that I want to write this book. And then Kyle Julius ran a program called A-Game Hoops. It was a senior men's team. And they basically barnstormed around Ontario and upper U.S. and senior men's team. And they clobbered most university teams, CIS, sorry, U sports teams.
We say CIS.
I know. We all catch ourselves for now. I'm a CIAU guy, so that's all far back
there you
I go. But we were playing, I was coaching Guelph at the time, and Kevin was, they didn't have a point guard. They had lots of great players, former pros, former all-Canadian guys, but they didn't have a point guard. And Kyle's theory was that we're going to use these senior men's teams, but we're also going to allow some high school kids to train with us. And it's sort of a European model of development. Mm-hmm. So Kevin in the game is basically torching us. He's in grade 11 and he's torching us. If you're on him tight, he blows by you very, very quick little pull up or floater or gives to the big. And if you're off him at all, it's in. And the head coach, I'm the assistant coach, the head coach, Chris O'Rourke, leans over to me and says, "That guy can't miss." And there was a word in between can't and miss that I won't say right now. But that's right away I said, hey, title. I had a title for this book at least a year before I wrote a word.
Now, obviously, I came across the book on social media, and I'm a basketball junkie. So if it's basketball in any way, shape, or form, books, movies, I always want to consume it. But this book isn't only about Kevin in terms of like a biography in his career, which is not even over yet. Tell us it's more than that, right?
Well, one of the things that I felt when I got talking to Kevin when I interviewed him is just the amount of amazing people around him. In my opinion, a lot of it starts with Bill and Patty, parents that they wanted their children to love activity, to love all sorts of sports, and to sort of be good at everything, and then see what happened after that. But to be active, to be outdoors, to be active. And at an early, early age, they were doing that. And then basketball sort of took over, but Kevin played various sports. I heard you in the earlier segment. Kevin, in my opinion, is a poster child for that idea of development through playing all sorts of different sports.
Right.
And Kevin did that. And I think the stream that I went, and back to, you know, the whole idea of Kevin as a Canadian, was he stayed home. He stayed home. He didn't do the, nothing wrong with it. We're all on paths. Like, you guys are on a path. Yep. Like, you're here now and you're doing great at this level, but what is your future? Where are you going? Where am I going? We're all on a path. Well, Kevin's path involves staying at Dr. Dennison in Newmarket and being coached and getting trained by some of the best trainers around. So the idea that the book isn't just about Kevin. It's about everybody. Like, it goes back to, like, Roy Rana, who's doing very, very successfully at Ryerson and in the NBA circles, and Leo Routens and Matt Nickel from BioSteel, and all these people were around Kevin. So they're in the book because they need to be in the book. A kid doesn't become a great basketball player in a bubble. They need all sorts of people in the sort of the village makes a child.
Right.
So that's the idea that I wanted to try to bring out. And then he connected with a bunch of great people in Gonzaga. That's another big part of the story.
You mentioned Gonzaga and the values that his parents brought to him. Dwayne and I were just talking in our previous segment about we like to highlight different players and what they've done and if they're having a really great week. And I mentioned that I'm kind of sad we haven't been able to find any 6th or 7th or 8th graders. And he mentioned Kevin being one of those players that we caught him young, and sort of there can sometimes be a double-edged sword where a lot of pressure then gets put on it. Does having that tight-knit group of great people around Kevin help? Did it help him to sort of grow and not allow the pressure to get to him as it has other people?
Well, an interesting story about that. I think the people around Kevin, for sure, all the players around Kevin helped too. I think one of the terms that I bring out in the book is the idea of legacy. And I think that the legacy of the Raptors starting in 95 is these guys that are coming, the Wiggins and Pangos and all these guys that are coming around now. I think big part of that is of that legacy. But the idea of Kevin and pressure, he was in the Silver Fox tournament in Hamilton, and there was a big spread on the paper, big picture of Kevin, and the headline said, "Next Steve Nash." And
I remember
a coach quoted, "Oh yeah, this guy, he's the next Steve Nash. He does everything like Nash." And I phoned Bill and said, "Bill, you got to see the paper. It's awesome. There's a picture of Kevin and next Steve Nash." And he said, "Yeah, Kevin contacted me, and he's furious.
Yeah.
He's furious, not because of the pressure, but the sense that I don't want to be the next Steve Nash. I want to be the best Kevin Pangos I want to be. That's unfair to Steve Nash and everything Steve Nash has done. That's unfair to me, and I've done nothing, you know, as a grade 11 kid sort of thing." And I just thought that he's so grounded in family values that something like that meant nothing.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really cool. So the pressure, a big part of the book too, and a big part of Kevin's life, and it's sort of weird, the title came out Can't Miss from a game that he was playing in, but in actual fact, it's a philosophy that Kevin lives and that we all should live, is the idea that we can't miss. Like, whatever you want to do, if something bad happens, you move on, because you can't miss if you are passionate about your goals. If something great happens, that's awesome. Move on and continue on your path. So the pressure never really got to him, because he was always in the gym working out, trying to, you know, be a gym rat, work harder than anybody else, and be the best Kevin Pangos he could be.
Well, speaking on his work ethic, his determination, his skill set, which you're very familiar with, are you a little surprised he's not part of the senior men's program right now?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressures on the guys to make decisions. Like, Kevin went to the summer league last year,
yep.
and forego the opportunity to work with the senior team, and I think he's in the mix. I think I do not know this from any knowledge from talking to Jay or anyone, but I get a sense that there's a group of about 30 guys that are in the mix, and then the new FIBA format where there's going to be qualifications when NBA guys aren't available,
right.
they're going to need a bigger pool to draw from, and I think Kevin's in that pool. So, in my opinion, they needed Kevin 2 years ago in Venezuela to back up when Corey got in foul trouble. But that's my opinion.
Well, that's all I'm asking for.
I know. And that's one thing that I really admire and I learned from Kevin is rankings and all the you know, when do you, who's ranked, all this, it's all just people's opinions.
Right.
And it doesn't really matter. They were ranked number one time. And I said, what does it feel like to be ranked number one? And people were, you know, dumping on you guys because you were number one and they were hoping you were going to lose because that helps the narrative of the March Madness that number one loses and all that stuff. He said, that's just rankings. That doesn't mean anything. You go on the court and you play, and that's what he's always about. It's very, very admirable. And we always say that it's the process rather than the outcome, but read that book and you'll see proof.
No, you mentioned, obviously, as Dwayne alluded to, with Team Canada and the new FIBA qualifications. In your conversations with Kevin or Bill, has Kevin made mention or confirmed that if he is asked upon, because the qualifications are going to be happening when NBA players will most likely, depending on contracts, not be allowed to play for their respective countries, has he made the decision that he'll take time away from whatever pro team he's playing with and make the trip to be part of the red and white and don his country on his chest?
He's been very proud to represent Ontario, represent Canada, wherever he could. And if things work out, he would definitely, definitely love to play. His dream since he was a little kid was NBA. And it's not like he didn't get drafted at the NBA draft. He wasn't even disappointed. He moved on. He just said, that's life. I move on. I'm not good enough. I got to go to Europe. I got to get better. So the whole idea that he's trying to get better. He's now playing in the Euro League, which is the best league in the world outside of the NBA, and he's doing very well in that. And I think that he is still on target to be in the NBA, but Canada is a big part of his plans for sure.
It's funny how you go off the radar. I mean, you know, notable high school career, notable national team career, notable NCAA career, and doesn't go to the NBA. He's playing in EuroLeague and he's doing well, but it's like no one's talking about Kevin Pangos anymore. It's almost out of sight, out of mind in a sense.
It's what have you done for me lately little bit. I think there's that part of it too, but people are following him big time. Like he was in Gran Canaria last year, which is the Euro Cup League, and he was an all-star in that league. And then he goes and plays for Atlanta last year in Summer League. He was awesome. He was absolutely awesome. So there's NBA people looking at him. Now they want to see, okay, what are you going to do in the Euro League? Let's see what you do in the Euro League. And it's good because that's what progression is about, is you are faced with challenges and you rise above those challenges. And there's more challenges coming for sure.
When you look at I sort of want to flip the script a little and talk a little CIS because you've coached within the CIS now.
What's
U Sports,
CIS? Is that something?
Which
CIAU.
Was CIAU when you were coaching. when you look at the way that Canadian university basketball
well said.
has come, and you look at your time at Guelph, do you think recruiting then versus recruiting now for coaches is harder because a lot more Canadian players are, one, playing in prep leagues in the States. Two, their only goal, their tunnel vision is, I just want to play NCAA, and they're not really thinking about staying at home. Do you think the recruiting is a little harder now versus then?
I could get into deep philosophical talk about this, because when I think of somebody like Kevin Pangos, it was Division I, and he wanted Division I, and he was Division I capable. But he was surrounded by people that have family values of reality, and there's no entitlement, and you got to earn everything. And Kevin worked his brains out constantly to reach that goal. I think now a lot of people feel that they're getting a scholarship is the end, when in real fact it's actually the beginning of a new level. It should be a beginning of a new level. But I think a lot of people put the onus out there that we're all going D1. We're all going to be the next Wiggins. We're all going to be the next Pangos, you know, finished All-American. We're all going to be, and it puts a lot of pressure on a kid to, you know, understand, you know what, it isn't what somebody says about you in a magazine. It isn't what you're ranked in the top 100. It's what you do in the gym every day. And you, if you're good, they'll find you. You know, they saw Kevin Denison High School in Newmarket, small school, great program. He was the center of that program. They were surrounded with a bunch of great people, great teachers, and it's all in the book as well.
We're talking about the CIS versus NCAA thing, because you talk about players who think, whether they are legitimate D1 or they think they're D1, yeah, they'll look at go, oh, I'm D1, I need to get a scholarship, I'm going to go D2, or I'm going to go JUCO and hopefully get my way back up. But people kind of overlook the CIS or U Sports as we know it now. And it's evolved a lot since even when you were coached, in terms of like, how have you seen the evolution between U Sports or CIS between now and when you were coaching?
Well, I think personally, like, there's, you know, as an example, there's a game tonight up at Ryerson. I think U Sports basketball is a great vehicle for kids to play, get good education, great coaching. One of the things that we talk about is the new era of all these players, but there's not much talk about all the great coaching that is out there, and there's great coaching in U Sports, and I feel that that's being missed. And if high school kids didn't follow the hype, but were surrounded by people that were helping them figure out their path, if they went to a game, they'd say, you know what, I could play here, and I want to play here. I want to stay home. I don't want to go down to some D2 school and be completely forgotten about. I want to go to Ryerson or Toronto or Guelph or Mac or wherever and build my future out of that.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And we can'tmisskid.com, right, is where people can find the book?
Yeah, I want to make a point about that. It is can'tmisskid.com, but I got it published. When I did this, I knew nothing about what I was doing. A lot of people would agree out there. But I published it with a company in Indianapolis. And if you are Canadian and you order it through can'tmisskid.com, it costs, because of all the exchange, that book costs about $41. If you order it through me, I'll mail it to you the next day, and it costs you $26.
How can they get to you?
They get to me, and they get to me through coachduels71@gmail.com, and I'll mail it the next day.
Awesome.
And I really, like I said, it's underachieving. I got to do a better job of getting the word around Canadian basketball.
Glad we can help.
The book is Can't Miss, the Kevin Pangos story. He is the author and family friend, Chris Dooley. Thank you so much for joining us here in studio. Stay tuned. We've got more Home Court right here on TSN 1050.
This is Home Court on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto basketball.
Welcome back inside the TSN 1050 studios. Maggie McPeak and Dwayne Watson, you're listening to Home Court right here on TSN 1050 and the iHeartRadio app. As our first show of 2017 is...
I'm just coming down from it. Like, I know. Just like power and great conversation, right? And enlightenment and interviews and stuff. So
it's been great. And of course, we heard this past week, Dwayne Casey was named Coach of the Month for December for the Toronto Raptors. And then... like 3-4 days later, Jerry Stackhouse was named Coach of the Month for December for the 905. So, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time in NBA and NBA D-League history that the same team's franchise and affiliate were named Coach of the Month in the same month.
That's great. I think
for sure for the Raptors.
I think it's an achievement for Coach Stackhouse in terms of him being a new coach and what he's been able to do with this team and, you know, the transition and change that happens with, you know, the 905 and D-Leagues and, you know, getting like a Tavares out of nowhere who comes in the lineup and guys going up and down. I think I find coaching at the D-League level more challenging than NBA because the goal is to get the players to be better so they get to go up.
Right.
So then you have you have to keep working with talent. So I think it's a good nod to Coach Stackhouse.
Right. And to your point too as well, if I'm not mistaken, I believe at this point of the season, they haven't had as many up and down assignments as they did last season.
Right.
Mind you, last season, they were essentially working with five players that they would send on assignment, three at one time. And we saw multiple times that that 905, I say we, because obviously, as you know, like I call the games.
I heard.
it's a rumor. They would send three at a time. That's the most you can send at one time. And majority of the time, 905 we're getting three players, and it's difficult enough when you throw one player down because you've gotten in a groove with your regular roster of D-League guys and non-affiliate players, and then all of a sudden you just throwing one player into the mix can throw things off. Mind you, throwing two or three, and luckily right now it's only been Van Vliet and Bruno being sent down back and forth, and it hasn't been very often because of the Raptors' schedule with them being on the road when 905 has been at home and flip-flopping back and forth. And right now, they're on 905 are on the road. They play tonight. It's the unconventional and odd doubleheader road, both in Chicago, taking on Chicago teams. But Fred and Bruno are on the road with the 905 as opposed to being with the NBA team, which is not something that we saw last year with the signees.
Keeping with the home court flavor, Negus Webster-Chan, a guy who made the team off the open tryout,
yep.
Almost called him Toronto legend, but definitely a guy who's been around the league, been basketball in Toronto circles, started a lot of games this season for the 905.
It's his birthday, I believe.
I believe
today is his birthday. Even though he's probably getting ready for game time, we got to give a happy birthday shout out to Negus Webster-Chan.
How's he been doing this season?
He's been pretty solid, and it's been tough because he goes with stretches where he'll be dressing, and then there's like two or three game stretches where he's not dressing and he's inactive. Right. But that also comes into play. I believe he's been dealing with a little bit of a hand issue because I've noticed I believe it's his right hand that he's got taped up right now. But when he's been inserted into the lineup, he's one of those players that he's stayed in his lane and he knows his role and he does it really well. And he adds length to the roster and to the defense. He actually got a start, second start of the season. After a couple, the 905 strung together like three losses, Coach Stackhouse basically like turned the starting lineup around, kept Fred and Bruno in the starting lineup because they were on assignment, right. And then went with Negus, Wiggins, and I believe Tavares. And that lineup, if I'm looking at that as an opposing player, that's a long, scary lineup.
I'm happy for Negus. I mean, he's not always had potential, kind of had a rough path here and there, whatever, and now it seems like in the 905, he's kind of finding his way, which is great for him. So That's really good to see.
The other thing, too, coming into it, it's getting close to the 10-day contract when it comes to the D-League. So we saw last year two players, Greg Smith, Axel Tupan, get called up and get 10 days. And it works because it happens right after the D-League showcase.
Which is in
Mississauga. It is January 18th to 23rd at the Hershey Center. Head to the D-League to get ticket information. It's basketball for like 6 days.
Every single D-League team is in Toronto, Mississauga, competing against one another in front of fans and NBA GMs looking at talent.
All 30 teams are there from the NBA, and all 22 D-League teams are there to try and get their 10-day call-up because there's typically no assignees in NBA affiliate players there. It's just your D-League guys trying to get their call-ups.
Sounds good.
First show of 2017 in the books. It's always fun. It's always fun. And we want to thank our guests, as always, ESPN writer Kevin Arnovitz, Raptors analyst Leo Routens, Chris Dooley, the author of Can't Miss the Kevin Pangos Story. Remember to go and find him on Twitter or email him, coachduels71@gmail.com, to get your copy of the book. And, of course, basketball insider Hassan Alanom. The guys behind the scenes are guy back at TSN headquarters, Grady Sass, of course. He keeps us on the station. Audio guru Andrew Nolan, producer Sean Woodley. For Josh Lundberg, my man to the left, Dwayne Watson. I'm Meg McPeak, and ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to protect home court.